There we go. On Monday, we record these talks so that if folks like Renee, who cannot be here, might want to hear the talk. So when I was thinking about hearing Renee, I was excited. Have heard wonderful talks by Renee before. And so when it came at about 3 o'clock and I found out that I'd be pitch hitting, I thought, well, let me just go online for a minute and see what are some themes that Renee focuses on. And the theme of taking refuge is a significant one. And Renee refers to that taking refuge as being in a place where I can be fully free to be all of who I am. All of who I am. And I thought, wow, what a beautiful concept for us to think about. And hopefully in a couple of weeks, Renee will come. And, you know, I don't know that that's what Renee will talk about that night, but whatever it'll be wonderful. But in the meantime, I was just thinking that, you know, yesterday, was Pride here and in Seattle and maybe in some other places where you all are. Next Monday will be something that we in the United States call Independence Day. And that's when, you know, our nation declared that it was free of England and that all men were created equal. And then June 19th, last Sunday, was the first official nationwide official holiday celebration of Juneteenth. And that's a holiday that is one very specific reminder to all of us that the holiday that we celebrate on June 14th about freedom and independence was very specific and very limited. And frankly, in the earliest times did not include probably almost anyone that's on this Dharma meeting tonight. So they talked about certain inalienable rights. And what we know is that they didn't include our right to live with dignity, our right to live as we choose in terms of our health and our families, and the rights of people of color to be full participating citizens in the process. So what we needed was to take refuge. And Juneteenth, in fact, was a holiday in which the African-American community found through prayer and song and celebration and food and fellowship a way to take refuge and to be what they could not be in terms of the government sanctions or government extensions of rights. And frankly, that's what Gay Pride, what we celebrated yesterday in all of our cities, that's what that was too. You hear some talk that the original Gay Pride was a riot, and certainly the start of our movement towards liberation had some angry protests and riots. But by the time the parade started, and it was on Christopher Street in New York, it was a celebration of gay freedom, not LGBT at the time. The language hadn't become inclusive and proper and respectful, but it was a gay celebration. And so it was the same sort of thing. It was us, you know, many people who were in families, marriages, even jobs, schools, places where they couldn't be their, all of who they were. People who were leading the movements for gay and lesbian and bisexual and transgender civil rights, who in fact went to jobs for 40 or 60 hours a week, presenting as cisgendered straight folks. And so the Freedom Festival and Juneteenth, and even I suppose some of what goes on July 4th is, you know, in the early days that was, you know, independence from being under British rule. So these holidays were opportunities for us to take refuge. Who are we and what do we want to be? And, you know, the current Supreme Court has indicated that they and their political cronies are at war with the concept of the right to privacy. And I don't want to talk about politics here during our time together, but we do stick around afterwards. And if folks want to talk about politics, we could do that afterwards or make a lunch date or whatever, or more better, rather than make a lunch date with me, talk to John Lewis, who's a lawyer and far more expert than I am on all that. But just to mention that things that we have taken for granted as communities, communities of color, Black, Indigenous, and other people of color, LGBTQA plus communities, things that we have taken for granted, women and their right for 50 years to have some control over their health care and their reproductive rights and the right to an abortion, all of that, this Supreme Court seems in a great hurry to get rid of. So more about that later, but I think that's another reason why we come together on those holidays, and for us every Monday or whenever you practice in your home Sangha. And I want to put up and have us speak together. Let's see if we can do this. There we go. So these are a new version of the Refuges by Thich Nhat Hanh. Can folks see those? Yeah. So if you'd like to unmute yourself and say them along with me, otherwise you can keep yourself muted and just say them quietly to yourself, and I'm going to read them for us. And these were written by Thich Nhat Hanh because he thought the original ones didn't really include the fact that if we wanted to find a place to be free, a place to be able to express our authenticity, which is a gift of Buddhism, that there was something missing. And I'm going to read these through and then we'll talk about that. It says, I take refuge in the Buddha and the Buddha takes refuge in me. Taking refuge in the Buddha in myself, I aspire to help all people recognize their own awakened nature and realize the mind of love. Taking refuge in the Dharma, in myself, I aspire to help all people grasp the way of practice and walk together on the path of liberation. And finally, taking refuge in the Sangha, in myself, I aspire to help people build connections and communities and encourage liberation of all beings. So we can send anybody those if you want them, but those refuges are really important. And I think what's important and what Thich Nhat Hanh noticed in them is that they start with, I take refuge in the Buddha and the Buddha takes refuge in me. And so when I was reading some of Rene's work today and listening to two of his Rene's talks, I was deeply moved by that concentration on I can be all of whom I want to be. And so some of you have probably heard of Nick Walker and Nick's work on queerness and queer heresies, I think he calls it. And it's a beautiful set of writings. And I was just reading them today. Let me make sure I have the name right for you, because you may want to get them. Neuroqueer, he calls it. And basically saying that Nick started his work looking at folks on the spectrum, on the autism spectrum, and really began really using the word neurodivergent to say that, you know what, everybody that exists on the planet thinks differently. The brain works differently. The mind works differently. The way we were raised impacts us differently. And our mind and brain interact with each other differently. So this notion that some people belong in a category or a pathology or whatever didn't make any sense to a lot of scientists and neuroscientists over the last several decades. And then Nick has also done this writing about these neuroqueer heresies. And it's kind of interesting and useful to read. And what he basically says is that, again, people have a way of saying how we should be. And I don't know about any of you, but when I was a little kid, if I wanted to be accepted by my family, there was a way I should be. And when I went to school, if I wanted not to get my ass whipped several times a week, which mostly happened anyway, because then as now, I knew how I had to be, but wasn't at all interested or gifted in being that, as was evidenced in the third grade when I took my sister's little pink record player to school and put on a record by Martha and the Vandellas and lip sync in front of the classroom in the Catholic school. So it was clear that I wasn't buying into how I was supposed to be. But in order to survive in school, I certainly did some of that, right? We all did, in order to get a job, in order to keep a job, in order to show up at family reunions or holidays. It, for many of us, became much easier to say, you know what? It's just easier to be some safe version. It's smarter to be some safe version. Many of members of our community have been physically and emotionally and spiritually scarred because they could not, would not, or just didn't have the opportunity to be the version that the institutions and people around them wanted them to be. And so what it seems to me we celebrated yesterday and we're celebrating today in our Sangha is this whole idea of refuge. and that our liberation is our refuge, and that what Thich Nhat Hanh offers us in those new refuges is the opportunity to say, how can we do this? How can we do this? And we do it by first coming to that gift of authenticity. When we sit in meditation, it's not just about getting into a posture. It's not just about quieting down. It's about arousing present moment awareness. Who am I? Who am I right now? And the teaching of the Buddha is that the meditative state is actually the natural state of human beings. Right? For the vast majority of us, we float around for 9 months, completely taken care of in some warm liquid with mom. And everything's taken care of for us. And then we're born. And in many cases, not all, things are really taken care of again. And then gradually, we need to negotiate for food. We need to negotiate for the toy we want. We need to negotiate all sorts of things. And we figure out ways to do that. That sometimes, I don't know if any of you became the cutest kid around to get the food or toys that you wanted, or later became the meanest kid around or the most sarcastic kid around. But we all figured out ways to do that. And so from a very early age, we started being moving away from that original authentic self, who was a person who was lovable and capable of love, who had some needs that were all reasonable and appropriate and found ways to get those needs met. And then as the world got more complicated around us, we took on different personas and different meanings. So I think that this liberation and freedom that we long for and that we celebrated yesterday or on Juneteenth or we'll celebrate next week, I really want to refer to those as verbs and not nouns. So I think the process of liberation, the process of enlightenment that we talk about in Buddhism, the process of freedom and emancipation, I think all of those are verbs. And I think that's the real gift that we have. The real gift that we have for ourselves is that we get this opportunity to say, how will I sit on this cushion or in this chair and return to my authentic self and then find a way to be that person in the world? Not in conflict with people who want me to be something else, but standing on my own ground, sitting safely in my own safe place, being safe in my own safe boundaries. Not letting people come in who want to change me unless I'm ready or wanting to be changed. Not letting people attack me for being who I am or what I am. And in Sangha and in our liberation movements that we celebrated yesterday, what we find out is the Buddhist practice of authentic self and then interconnection. There's a lot of teaching about interbeing. So I can't always take care of myself, 70 years on the planet. And I can't always take care of myself, but I know that if I recognize that, then I'm able to turn to my Sangha, to turn to my friends, to turn to other men, women, and folks who are of the same path that I am and say, you know what? Today I need help. Some days I can provide help. Today I need help. And so when we do that in Buddhism, we have the Eightfold Path. The first noble truth is there is suffering. And the teaching is there are 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows. There is indeed suffering. But the Buddha taught us that suffering is not enough. We have a responsibility to move past suffering. And there's a reason for suffering. We move past suffering to the third noble truth. There is an end to suffering. And the end to suffering is what we choose to do about it. And I don't mean to dismiss the real racism and transphobia and homophobia and misogyny that's rampant in the country right now, but it's how we choose to engage for ourselves as people. And so Lian Shute, who speaks here from time to time, has changed the Eightfold Path, and usually called right view, right intention, etc. And she instead calls it skillful view, skillful intention, skillful speech, skillful action, skillful livelihood, skillful effort, skillful mindfulness, and skillful concentration. And so in Buddhism, historically, there's not a lot of talk about right and wrong, good and bad, because that would be dualistic and we don't do that. What there is talk about what skillful means. And what that means is what works for you. And it's a really simple teaching, which says, as you go through life, you can stop every once in a while and say, is this working? And if it doesn't work for you, if it's not enriching your life, then stop doing it or stay away from it or find an alternative for yourself. Walt Whitman, the poet, said, and I said this at our retreat last week, so for those who were there, sorry I'm repeating, but Walt Whitman said, carefully examine everything in your life and dismiss that which insults your spirit. Examine everything and dismiss that with which insults your spirit. So I think I would like us to have a few minutes to just talk to each other in smaller groups. And we have, I think, about 9 minutes left. So maybe we'll go into those groups for just about 5 or 6 minutes. And I'm going to put up on the screen, just take a quick look at them. Here you go. And there are three questions that you can choose to talk to each other about. First one is, how are you promoting freedom, liberation, and enlightenment in your life this week? Not a big question, just this week, between the prides and Juneteenth and what's happening next, 4th of July. Or you could take the second question, how do you take refuge as a spiritual practice or a survival practice? What do you do for yourself to take refuge? And then the third question is, in what ways would you like for us as your friends or for the Sangha to support you in finding and enhancing and sharing the Buddhist gift of a life filled with peace, ease, and authenticity? So we've got about 8 minutes at this point. And so I'm just going to put folks in groups of maybe about three. And when you first get in, because a couple of you have two people in a window, so we're going to switch around a little bit so we have even numbers. But we'll just put you in a group and just pick one of those questions. Basically, what are you doing about peace and freedom? How are you taking refuge? And why, you know, when you belong to a Sangha such as this one or other home groups that you belong to, how is it that the Sangha can help you to take refuge, as Renee and others have described it? So we're going to go into breakout.
Stephen?
Yes.
As you put people in groups, if you could put me with the phone number that shows there, if the phone number can go into a group, because my audio is not working well, so I called in as well.
So that's you?
Yeah, that's me. So just put both of me in the same group.
I said that to a Luddite as though I would understand what that meant, and I did. Yay! Okay. So...
coming along, Stephen.
There we go. So, okay, so we're going to create some groups. And as I say, when you first get in, there'll be a second where you might get moved to another room to try and even things out. Okay. There we go. So welcome back, everybody. Sorry that there wasn't more time. For those that might be new, when we finish this formal part of our program, we leave the room open for 15 or 20 minutes, as long as people want to talk, and we can continue those conversations, or in fact, put you back in a small group if you'd like, if you didn't get a chance to finish. But I did want to take just one extra minute to read you a little sonnet by a guy named Ravi Chandra. I am a collection of parts, a multitude of selves. They play inside me like precocious elves. A warrior battles, a peacemaker works, a heart-mind bureau with tireless clerks, a woman, a child, an adversary, a friend, critics and supporters and actors with ends, healer and patient, trickster and mole. They observe, they comment, they sometimes control. An emergence, a symphony, a chorus, a blend, a circus I carry, a circle I mend. Admirers with whispers, detractors with swords, this collection is work, I am never bored. Fractious and playful, serious and fun, interdependent we are, for many we're one. So just gives us an opportunity, and hopefully we'll hear from many other speakers, including Renee, about this joyful process of taking refuge first here and then here. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Stephen.
Stephen, thank you so much. So let's close with just a short sit for a minute, and we'll dedicate the merit, and then we'll open up the room. So let's sit together.